Hey, Rick, 602, yeah. Man, let's get started. I know you'd rather be home with your wife and doggies and whatnot, so.
Wife, doggies, and Harvey. I just want to go off the cuff, don't have anything real prepared. I just wanted to answer some of the questions and make myself available to you guys.
So, well, you know, we did that written interview not so long ago, and let me pull that up. Your military career, did you get into that like at the age of 18 or something right out of high school, or did you?
Yeah, it's a cool story. I kind of like it. I was kind of like the coal miner's daughter. I was a copper miner's son, and lived in a little small town in Arizona, and I just knew I didn't want to stay there and figured, and honestly, I just wanted to serve my country, so I joined the Air Force and turned 18 in boot camp.
You signed up yourself and went to the Air Force.
Well, actually, I was trying to sign up to be a Marine, but my mom said that you're only 17, I have to sign for you, so you're either going to be a Navy like your grandfather, or you can do the Air Force, so I chose the Air Force. So get out there and go to, I leave Phoenix, Arizona on August 10th, 1986, 110 degrees here, and got to San Antonio, Texas, 90 degrees, 90% humidity, and this cactus was not happy, it wasn't good, but joined the Air Force to see the world and end up back at Luke Air Force Base in Phoenix, Arizona for 4 years.
Is that where you got your mechanical skills? They put you in the...
I think I was born with them, my dad taught me to change oils, stuff like that as a kid, and I went, I liked to read and that, but I hated math, and so I was more, I'm left-handed, so I'm right-brained and more creative, and so I tended to go toward the mechanics. I did a lot of wood shop and automotive and all that stuff.
Hey, Mark, Sager. Man, can you hear that guy typing? I think Fred muted him. Yeah. Mark, you are so loud when you type, man. It's like 200 words a minute. All right, Fred muted you. When you're done typing, we'll unmute you. Anyways, so Rick, you did get some mechanical skills there in the Air Force, right?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, absolutely. I learned a lot about it. What I really learned there is, as I said, turned 18 in boot camp and learned to become a man within about 6 weeks, from a mama's boy to a man. So I remember distinctly probably the longest day of my life was flying out, as I said, from Phoenix early in the morning and not getting into my bed until, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, and within 3 hours, 4 hours, woke up to reveille, and I remember just dreaming I was back home, and my mom was just softly saying, "Wake up, son," and next thing I know, the drill sergeant runs in with a garbage can lid, just smashing it, and I jumped out of the bed and landed straight upright on my feet, so it was baptismal by fire. I learned to become a man there. That's where the best thing, but the aircraft, I loved working on F-16 fighters. It's pretty cool.
So when you got out of the Air Force, how long did it take you to get sucked into the rug cleaning industry? Pardon me.
Pretty cool. It was only about, I got out of the Air Force a little early, so it was about 3 years. And so I was out as a civilian working as an AMP licensed mechanic and at the Williams Air Force Base as a civilian. But they were about to close it down, so. Buddy of mine was working at ProChem. He was working at nights with me, and he's like, "I can get you a job over there." And I met Mike Roden for the first time.
You're working nights, so doing assembly of machines?
No, on the aircraft. On the aircraft, I was working nights. It was daytime at ProChem. ProChem was only one shift, and that's where I learned. When they told me they were working on carpet clean machines, I thought there was those R2-D2 things you see at the car washes. And I get there, and there's it's called the 800A, had a three-cylinder 1.2-liter Nissan, and a guy named Charlie Broad is assembling, he pulled a box of parts, big brass parts, and a blueprint, the old-school blueprint, pulled it out, and he threw out the parts and says, "Make that out of that," pointing at the blueprint, and I did it probably 30 minutes or so, and he says, And he goes, so you think you can assemble this after the end of the day? So you think you can do this thing? And I said, yeah, sure. And he goes, good, because I'm going on vacation next week. So I was, once again, introduced baptismal by fire, but I learned a whole lot there. Got to see the evolution of the heat exchanger, because, as I said, the 800A certainly didn't have a whole lot of heat compared to today's truck mounts.
Yeah. So you went from wrenching at ProChem to – that wasn't straight to working with Nessinger?
Yep. Went up there to work for
Nessinger. Did they lure you over there with a job?
Yep. Discount. I went from wrenching to I started answering service calls for ProChem for about a year, just about a year in 95. And somebody just kept calling all the time for just real simple problems out of Vegas. And I wasn't making a lot of money at that time. It was about $9 an hour. And the guy called the guy up and said, man, you seem to have a lot of problems out here, a lot of issues. And they seem pretty simple. So he offered to fly me up and flew my wife and myself up there and got a look at it and offered me a pretty good amount of money and came back down and just kind of had to tell Mike and Jim Roden that I was going to give them my 2 weeks' notice, which I did. And I remember being told, hey, you know, Vegas could be hard on a marriage. And I thought to myself, well, soaking $9 an hour.
So when you came back to work for Roden or with Roden, what was his? What's the first thing he said to you?
Well, you know, it was kind of cool. The mine and Mike Roden's relationship was, remember, it's a 20-year character arc or 20-year arc, and I at the time didn't understand his genius, and I guess I would have taken it for granted. But once I got out there into the real world and saw a lot of these other truck mounts that are these off-brand things, you know, and things I had never seen before, I started understanding the importance of engineering and understanding the marriage between the blower and the engines and the heat exchange designs and all that. And so I started a whole new respect for Mike Roden. And eventually he and I, you know, I'd see him at trade shows and that, and we all of a sudden became more like peers instead of boss to worker relationship. And that's really grown to where it's at now, where I just have nothing but the utmost respect for him. And actually his whole entire engineering team at Sapphire is just, I mean, Bill and Ron and, I mean, just Kevin, all these guys are just, it's phenomenal.
That's Cracker Jack, yeah. So that brings us to Sapphire. Let's skip ahead a decade or so.
Good with that.
And you started with Sapphire as, you know, what was your title? What was your position initially?
And I gotta say this right off the bat is that, I mean, I just was a, as you know, I'm somewhat unorthodox. I'm not your typical, prototypical sales rep. And I started off as a distributor rep. But Doral Alsop and Bob Klein saw it in me, and they gave me that opportunity. And what Bob had said was, because I said, you know, I'm not your prototypical guy. You know, I don't – he goes, listen, we don't hire people here and put them in a box. We hire them for their strengths and specialties, and that's what they allow me to do. And, I mean, even now with my new position, even more so, which is really cool, which is, you know, truck mount. I call myself now the truck mount placement specialist. I feel it's very important to listen, and by becoming that, and if you think of it in those words as a truck mount placement specialist, you take a lot of burden, really, and take it to heart. When this person's talking to you, you sit and listen to them and try to understand exactly what is it this guy needs, you know, and if it's something he doesn't need that we don't have, which is really not anything out there that I could think of, but if it's something they need or they don't need, I just don't want to put them in something that like I said earlier, I want them to succeed, and I really, truly take it to heart for these guys.
You're obviously still working with the end user, from what I can tell, most of the time, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one thing that I've always thought was, because I've been on all sides of this spectrum. I've been on the carpet cleaner side. I've been on the retail side. I've been on the manufacturing side multiple times. And there's some things that I've took out of there that I've always hated. One thing I've always hated to hear from anybody and any of my team members is, hey, that's not my job. You know, I don't care what has to get done. I'm going to get dirty. I'm going to do it. And so that's where I try to I hope everybody, you know, and that's the cool thing about our team is they all that same way too. There's no, hey, that's not my job and that. So
yeah, I can certainly attest to that dealing with you guys. But yeah, it'd be a huge mistake to take you out of the face of the public. You know, you're you become Mr. Sapphire here in a rather short time, and I don't know how many times I've handed out your number to people wanting more information, help, whatever, and I just go, Rick's the guy to call, and he'll take it from he'll take it from there.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I like you said, it's not tireless, but sometimes it weighs on you, and you know, there's calls that come in, and I truly give my number out, and I'll give it to out right now again too, is that, you know, if you need us, you got to do, and my motto has been, do what they can.
Well, you're not just selling, you know, 3 units a month or whatever either. You guys got a lot of units out there. And why don't let me talk about that for a second here. Why don't you go over what you like in the Sapphire lineup, and I guess starting with the Rage and who you see that machine's ideal for, then the 370, 570, and then the 1200. Those seem to be the best sellers from what I can gather.
Yeah, those are the top four best sellers. And so really, excuse me, the Rage is just realistic. Everybody knows it. It's what you would call an entry level, but I call it entry level by price only. And the reason I say that is because we do take a little added expense, have a little added expense on our units because we're incorporating our belt cooling system on that, even the entry level unit, and we're utilizing the Kohler engine, which, I mean, it's just opinion, but I feel the Kohler engine is the best and most proven air cooled engine in this industry. And so the Rage, just price points, I think, is very reasonable. And anytime someone's looking at a portable, and if they get up into the range of $7,000 with something, and then it's somewhat attainable for them to go and make that little extra leap to get to another $6,000, puts you at 15, and you can be in startup unit. So that's the Rage. And like I said,
and I'll go ahead. People still asking to get a Rage and, you know, the minivans, the Transit or the ProMaster City and whatnot, or is
that
kind of faded out?
We've faded it out intentionally, and Ford essentially faded it out because their specs do not match anymore. Their load is the capacity's dropped, I think, by 300-400 pounds or something on the new 2014s and newer, and so.
Yeah, I think it's down to 16 or 17.
Yeah, and it's just, safety-wise, it just it didn't make sense anymore. So anybody wants to
That water and the vacuum and everything else, too much.
Go with the find yourself a good old Chevy Astro or something. Those things pretty stout.
Yeah, that's something they shouldn't have stopped making. Chevy's doing they're just rebadging the Nissan, which is kind of a mistake.
And someone might ask if it'll fit in there, to be honest with you. I just don't feel safe to say it would. I would just say, let's get you into a half-ton vehicle or something.
But yeah, a half-ton could handle it, right? Yeah. Assuming they're not throwing a bunch of Simexes in there and whatever. And it's realistically a, 150-foot max machine?
No. I would say, you ask a lot of Rage guys out there, and I bet you they could get 200. I would say 200 is where you're going to start seeing some loss of vacuum. And, you know, as we all know, just if you do see that or notice it, just do an extra dry stroke and throw down a Studebaker air path.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all right. Right. And then so you step up to the 370, and it really is the best-selling unit out there. And for good reason. I think the balance
in your lineup or in the truck mount world?
I think in the truck mount world. And those things they just sell and sell. We can't build them fast enough. And we've got the beauty is we are working I don't know if we're working two shifts now still, but we're just manufacturing as fast as we can. And last week we were out of our 370s. As many as we built, we were out of them and needed more again this week. And it makes it difficult when you have, you know, four or five other units that you need to get produced at the same time. So
that's outselling all your other machines combined almost, or not quite?
I do some things intentionally, Mike. A lot of things I do intentional, and it's because I am such a motor mouth. I try not to allow myself to be privileged to any of that stuff. I don't want to know it. I don't want to see it.
I got you.
I honestly, yeah. I don't know what our numbers are. I know that, hey, this is the number I got to meet every month. This is how many truck mounts I got to sell, and that's what I sell. And I've lived that way for a long time. And I want to be in the dark with all that, because when you ask me and anybody else asks me, I just want to be able to tell them exactly where I'm at. And, you know, if I don't know, I can tell you, hey, I really don't know. I don't know the numbers.
That's all right.
I really don't know. I just know we sell a whole bunch of them.
Yeah. Well, the next one, the 570, seems to be the darling of the bulletin boards, just because the thing's so damn hot, and it's, you know, it's a little more macho than the 370, I guess. And
yeah, it's the 570 is my favorite unit, and I trust my mechanical instinct on it, and now it's got a proven track record, but it just, to me, my favorite slide in before the 570 ever was the Performer 405. That was Mike's classic machine. But I equate the 570 is every bit as much of a classic as that 405. And I would say arguably maybe even better. And with the platform, the engine platform, the Kubota, the blower, I like the horizontal setup of the blower, just a whole lot of things that he's created. And then, and not only Mike, but his whole team, as I keep saying, but that heat exchange design was just brilliant. And with all of those, the combination of all that, if I was going to buy a machine right now, it probably would be the 570, maybe the 1200 now.
Mm-hmm. Derek, I think that's Derek from up in Detroit. He says, I swear they have a diesel burner hidden in the 570. And that's what I hear from, I know a lot of 570 owners, they all say the damn thing, the same dang thing. It's just a screamer. So when the very first time I saw the heat exchange design that Rodin came up with for you guys, you know, it was totally revolutionary.
Yep.
With all that heat dumping in there. And that was the first thing I said. I said, this, everything's got to be too hot. So how are you regulating this and bringing it down for the guys that aren't heat freaks? Because personally, I don't really like going over 210.
Yeah.
But from what I gather, the 570 wants to sit there at, you know, 240, 260 all day. But is there a dial on there? I haven't stood in front of one for a while, but it's accurate. And
First off, let me say hi to Derek. Derek's got the 1200, and he's a good man. Him and I have been on the phone, and even on Saturday, him and I were on the phone, which is kind of good and bad. Bittersweet. Love the guy. Say hello to him. But, so as far as the heat exchange goes, that's the what I really thought was brilliant was, if you think about it, go back to the 405. Prior, and this is just my experience, what I feel, prior to the 405, right at that time, Mike and his team had come up with the idea of utilizing a catalytic converter, not for emissions or EPA, but to utilize that post-catalytic heat that is produced because it's reigniting a lot of the unburned fuel, and utilizing that as a boost, because as we all know, everyone's at that time was either using propane or kerosene diesel burners. And, you know, a secondary fuel source, and everybody really wanted to have a new consistent heat exchanger, something that was not, you know, wouldn't spike, or, you know, it just gave you consistent heats. And so Mike had, him and his team came up with a catalytic converter design, which was just brilliant. And it kind of revolutionized the industry back then. And I equate that to our new heat system. I put that on the same exact level as that evolution, in my opinion. But the new 570, 370, all those guys, the blue machines, utilize one thing that we hadn't done before, which is, bringing both engine and blower exhaust in into the same chamber, and then through a coiled stainless steel coiled heat exchanger, and then using primarily and almost solely, I wouldn't say solely on the 570 or 870, but primarily and almost solely reliance on eliminating the heat source of the, eliminating the heat source, taking the exhaust away from the heat exchanger to control your temperature, instead of where we used to have to bypass water, solenoids, and all the other things to control temperature. We were able to rely solely on the diverter valve itself mm-hmm. to control that temperature.
So I guess that brings us to the next unit. I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe because, I don't know, I'm so interested in that unit, but the Pro 1200, which you could affectionately call the 570 on a stick, it's all the same components. Yeah. to me, it just seems like that thing is just getting way more fanfare, at least online and through the airwaves than any of your other units have up to date. I don't know what your impression is on that, but
yeah, deservedly so.
Why is so much more than the other 570? Sorry, the other 1200. I mean, it's not really that different, do you think?
I think it is, well, and that's what the SC stands for, which is Sapphire Engineered. And so I think what we've got is like, I think a perfect hybrid of old, old school, a lot of the good stuff that White Magic had come out with. And I really love the blending valve for the temperature control system. There's a lot of the old fundamentals that are still involved in the engineering of this. But we put some new school twist on it, adding the new T408 blower with the Hilleflow, with the Hilleflow lobes, and being able to spin it at 3,250 RPMs, giving us a better heat, and of course, giving your optimum CFM out of it.
200. How many RPMs? 2,500.
It's like 3,250 typically, about 3,250, and the max on that blower. And that's the beauty of this, is the max on that blower.
And any idea what the competition, in other words, the three units that you're up against in the upcoming Vegas show are spinning their machines at? You don't know?
I do know some of that, but I hate even,
talking
about
it. I'm not even saying faster is better. I'm just curious what, what the other ones are. Maybe Sager knows what Butler's spinning at.
Yeah, Butler does, or Sager, I'm sure does,
he just typed 1750, so that's you're saying the 1200 spins twice as fast almost? Wow.
Mm-hmm. I guess so, if it's at 1750.
That's what
engine RPM, 1750.
Time you gear it down.
Yeah, that's engine RPM. We're running 14 on ours, but the 1750's got to be running the blower close. If it's a 4007,
that's a question that's more than likely going to come up quite a bit at the Vegas show. So you might want to have a cheater card in your back pocket there, right?
I don't need it. I know where we're at, but I don't like discussing other people's business, not my business on that. I know where ours is at.
The fanfare that the 1200's getting, it seems like it's the first one was like, all the old White Magic guys going, oh, thank God they're still making it. The parts cross over, because it certainly had its loyal fan base, and a lot of people were bummed to see White Magic go down. But this new one seems to be attracting not just, people that were possibly shopping for a Hydromaster, Butler, or Klinko, but just people finally considering switching from a slide in over. Why do you think that is, man? Is it the simplicity of it?
That's one thing that I've seen. It's been eye-opening for me. I've done a good I've spent, almost the last month out in the Northeast, out in from Detroit all the way across to New York and up in Freddy's area up there at the John Don up in Salem. And I've done all that, and so I've gotten to learn a lot of what the competitors are looking for, and what people are starting to see, and what they're really liking about the 1200, I guess, is the configuration. A lot of, and as you know this, mechanics are a lot of times the ones that sell truck mounts for you. I'm going to tell somebody up front, hey, this is what you want. Here's how you do it. This is the machine. This is what it does. And then when I leave, they go back to the back and talk to the mechanic and say, hey, man, what do you really think? And so I've spent, and all of us, you know, Doral and all the other boys here at Sapphire and Legend Brands have actually, you know, spent a lot more time with the mechanics and saying, okay, so, you know, what are some of the things that we could do better? And that's what we did when we implemented these changes on this machine. We listened to what mechanics wanted, what they didn't like, and a lot of those things. And mm-hmm. so I think that's part of it. I think really configuration with the power pack, which is the blower, engine, and all your components being raised up and easier accessibility to get at all the components, not having to bend over or it's not between your seats. So there's a lot of benefits with that too. So I think it was just a matter of and just really as simple as aesthetics. Look at between the seats and how that looks now. There was another. We might took a mindful look at aesthetics of the machine itself. And if you look at it as a total package combined with the water pond, it's very appealing to the eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just leaves all that room back there too.
Well,
yeah.
And the best thing about it, if you think about it, is my best salespeople are just like Bob Pashos there. Derek's going to be one of my best sales guys. Is the guys that actually buy these, Dave Gill, they buy these things. And then all I got to do is just, if somebody wants to know about a product, I just say, you know what, I'll tell you what, I'm not even going to call the guy. Here's his phone number. Ask him what he thinks about it. Because I'm a salesman to everybody. Everybody knows that. He's a salesman. He's going to tell me what his best about his product. But when you give it to a fellow cleaner to put their money where their mouth is, that's where the value comes. That's why I appreciate these guys, you know?
Yeah. Well, same thing with carpet cleaning. You know, your happy customers are your best salesmen. So.
That's right. If you use them right, and not even really use them right, if you guys are right, I really believe this. We are all partners in this thing. All of us are partners in this industry. And to be successful, the only way I'm successful is if you're operating and if you're successful too. You can ask my boss, all my bosses, how upset I get if something's not functional, if somebody's not working, even one guy, I lose sleep over it. I tell people that, and, you know, it probably ages me. I'm getting gray hair now.
Yeah, wait till you catch up with me. So let's say you were talking about Bob earlier.
Yep,
Pashos. Yeah, let's say, you know, he didn't need the 870. You got a guy coming from outside the industry that doesn't have any clue or preference towards a slide-in or a direct drive. I mean, what are the questions you ask a guy like that to point him to either a 1200 or a 570, which are essentially the same machine?
And that's a very good question. The simplest thing I would guess is especially if they're new in the industry, the biggest question is are you going to be operating it yourself, or are you going to have employees? You know, that's the first thing. Are you going to be doing a lot of tile in the ground? Are you going to be doing primarily carpet cleaning? Because whatever you're going to be doing, I'm going to find the right machine for you, see? So if you're doing your own work, if you're going to do a lot of hard surface, I think the 1200 is phenomenal, but I think the 570 blows it away with the hard surface cleaning side of things, specifically if you're going to be doing restaurants. And so, you know, because, I mean, it's just going to maintain that heat at high pressure. And so that's really, you know, just listen to what that customer is going to be doing most. If he's going to have employees, I would just say, listen, we're going to sacrifice some heat and pressure, and we're going to put you into a 1200 because you want simplicity. I mean, it's basic and standard. We all have heard that over and over again. But really, I mean, it's a lesson that we all could have is just listen to your customer, man. Just sit and listen to him. Let him talk. When I talk to my guys, man, it's like – I've got all the time in the world for you, man. I'm here for you today. And the biggest key, I think, is I'm here for you tomorrow after you buy the machine.
So,
still be your buddy.
You know, with a well-used – I mean, take a Hagopian, for example. You know, they're running Hydromaster CDSs. They got, I don't know, 25, 35 of those damn things. And at 5 years, they weed them out. the machine's still fine, but the tranny, the engines, in most cases, one or both have already been replaced at least once because they run them so hard. And that's just the fact of life when you're dealing with the GMC platform. And Butler doesn't make it friendly to swap the unit out. I don't even know if they'll do it at all. But what are you guys going to do in 5 years when you got this perfectly good unit sitting in a worn-out GMC? Will you have a replacement policy? Or
no, but, I mean, there'll probably be something available at that time. But to a certain point, there'll be some front-end still available. But I tell people right off the bat that when you're buying this machine, remember, when you're buying a Pro 1200, that 1200 and that machine are married. They're married to each other. And just manage expectations always. Listen, you know, it. Realistically, if you live in Phoenix here, it's a big city, you're probably going to get a lot more miles out on it. Mm-hmm. But let's be honest, there's, you know, hats off to Hydromaster for making a great unit. Hats off to Butler for making a great unit. The past history of those are, as you've seen those vans, I still see vans out there that are, I saw a 1991 old body Chevy with a Butler in it. In my travels, and he still was using it. Now he's buying a 1200 now, but that he's replacing that machine, and he said he's just going to keep that thing as a backup. So, I mean, yeah, you can.
Well,
you,
yeah, an owner-operator like Sager. Sager's getting, Mark, your microphone on. I mean, you're getting, what, 10 years out of your Butlers before you. Jeez, hold on. He's muted. Let me see if I can figure this out.
Hello.
By the way,
Rick,
there was there we go.
Hello. Hi
for a
there.
While there,
is
Dora
okay?
was answering questions, but there's quite a few. Yeah, we hear you. Mark, how long are you getting out of your Butlers? And we know you change your oil every three jobs and all that, but
yeah. Well, just so you know, our maintenance routine is kind of something we've done. We change our road miles about every 1,000 to 1,500 miles, and we know there's clock hours. But we just do it, and we switch out to different brand of oil, Rotilla T, and we go heavier oil intentionally. But we do that, we feel that, because you're ingesting dirt from outside, it can get into the oil and filters, and so we get longevity. We've got one van, a 93, still being used part-time. It's got over 11,000 hours on the Butler unit. Original blower and cat pump, I think, has been replaced once. Drive shaft, still original, but it's... And then 250,000 on the actual drivetrain and original motor. And it just started leaking a little oil last year, I understand. And so about 613,000 miles or 617,000 miles equivalent on that motor. You know, the body will start rusting off first. So a lot of our vehicles have got 300,000 to 400,000 equivalent road miles, you know, with the road miles and the Butler miles. So. And it's just a maintenance. I think you can get that out of any direct drive if you just do a maintenance program on it. So it's, you know, that's what I think is important.
I agree 100%. That's exactly right.
Yeah. You need to have the owner operator's design maintenance schedule. You know, obviously, you know, Hagopian or Coit, you know, when I work with Coit, we had all those CDSs and those things did not get maintained whatsoever. You know, they lived a short life.
You're going to get, even still with that, I think even reasonably, you're going to get 7 to 10 years, even though they beat it up. You will maybe change the tranny, go through brakes and all that, but I still see those things, they last and last and last.
So the big question still remains out there, you know, once GMC kills this platform, and nobody knows for sure, but we probably got 4 more years based on enough people in the know. But I guess the question is, who do you think is going to come up with a way to hook up a clutch drive or PTO to one of these transverse engines, a sideways engine in these Eurovans first? Someone's got to do it first. Apparently no one's done it yet.
Well,
I think otherwise
we'd
see
it. And I would expect nothing less from any of these guys and us either. None of us are going to show our card because obviously it'd be prudent for someone to come up with that platform. So I would assume everyone's got to be working on it. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, but that's what everybody was saying 2 years ago when we were still dealing with Econolines and Dodge Rams and all that. But now that there's three or four choices of a Eurovan, when are the cards going to get dealt? I just think there's probably sales being lost from people not wanting
Chevy
anymore.
It's a monumental task, remember.
So will,
you
will it take
all kinds of application reviews?
Oh, I know. But what's it going to take? Will we have to wait another 4 years, or is somebody going to finally say, okay, we've done it, and now you're all free?
And that might be part of it, too. I'm not sure. I mean, the beauty for us is that we just have a perfectly viable slide-in line. This 1200 is just one of the biggest, best cherries on the sundae, you know. It's good to have, and we love to have it, and put a lot of money into developing it. But our line, I mean, we're going to do real well. And, I mean, just wait till you see what Kim Spec is coming out with. You guys are going to see some of that at the show coming up. So we have, you know, that other income coming in. So the 1200, I'm not saying we're not doing anything. I'm just saying that I'm assuming everybody is.
Hey, Mike?
Well, you'd think, you know, clean cut. Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead, Mark.
Somebody just had a question here that I was monitoring, and Gus is asking, will the 1200s be available in a diesel van? So I thought, I didn't mean to interrupt another train of thought, but I was hoping it was an appropriate question to ask at this moment.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think that would require a whole nother bit of reengineering. So right now, no, it's just not.
Yes.
I think with where we're at is the we're
well,
happy.
That's a diesel van, but didn't I?
I suppose the heat is kind of part of the issue.
Well, that's a big part of the, especially in the northern territories.
Yeah,
you can do it down in Phoenix. You could get away with it.
Yeah, the diesels run too cool, but didn't the White Magic / Pro 1200, your guys, weren't those getting installed in the GMC gasoline cab overs?
Only were cab over gas.
I know,
yeah.
I saw one or two of those.
We didn't do any diesel, though.
Cab over gas, okay.
Yeah, we could do
now,
that.
Now, can you put the SE in the cab over gas? Yeah.
Yeah.
The diesels run so damn cool nowadays.
Not yet. That I think we'll be working on, but that we're not doing it yet. We are doing the van.
The SC is not available.
Not in the cab overs, but we're working on the conversions ones right now. The like the box truck ones, box truck conversions that are like the van front with the where it's like maybe a 4-inch riser for the bed.
Right, plumber's truck or whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Dennis Bruders is typing a thing here, and I'm not sure what it might be a question. I'm just kind of paying attention. Yeah,
probably going to say, Mike, shut
the
hell up.
To the man there.
Subject.
Sorry, guys.
So I know the whole basis, well, a big part of the basis of the Pro 1200 was the quick and easy install compared to the competition. Is that still proving to be the case, or are the guys, I assume you have a couple of dealers that have done more than one now, are they figuring it out and getting it in one day?
I was just at my local distributor in Phoenix here, and this was their second install. I did the front end myself, which was just, and I did it from absolute scratch to completion, not doing the heater hoses, but did the whole front end in about 4 hours. That's what I had estimated at, and so really, we had the front end, had the console / waste tank already in, but there's still a lot of extras that you have to do from that point. So I'm telling everybody, realistically, don't expect to get any kind of an installation, you know, special or price right now, because really, these guys, why rush an install, especially something that's running out the front of the vehicle? These guys are doing what I wanted to do is precise, clean installations, and we did make it easier, but really it's easier compared to what our 1200 used to be. The 1200 used to be, you'd have to pull off the harmonic balancer, which required at least a ½-inch impact, you know, air impact wrench, and just a whole lot of other things. So it took a long time to align the hard drive shaft. So we took a lot of that and made it a simpler install. So that's really what happened, was just compared to our old 1200, it's a much easier install.
We're going to have to get Sig or a rubber-padded keyboard, man, if he's going to keep this up.
Sorry, guys. Sorry about that. I'll pull the microphone away from the keyboard when I'm typing. Thanks, guys.
So the 570 is your unit of choice, you said. What's your favorite van? Well, let's say the Eurovans. Forget about the Chevy. If you're going to put the 570 in the Transit, the ProMaster, Sprinter, or Nissan, which way would you go?
I'm somewhat of a Ford fan, but to be honest with you, as a mechanic, I just don't like I don't like the restrictions Ford put on all of their for the installation. Excuse me, for all the installation requirements, and no matter what anyone says, I still look at that no drill zone, and it just seems to me to be a lot of legal speak of saying, hey, if you drill even in this one spot, we're no longer liable. So I'm always concerned with that. And so that being said, ProMaster, I think. Right now is my favorite non-Pro 1200 platform, really. You can fit anything and everything in there. You know, take away Lance's problem with his front brakes. I think that'd be
But that was the 870, and Lance is probably carrying around, you know, 200 gallons of his miracle water, too, probably.
Yeah,
overwhelming.
Yeah, a lot of weight. So, yeah, I would say the ProMaster right now, if I'm doing an install, that would be my favorite. And stand by. There's going to be some new stuff. Like, I mean, just like we always do, we've got some new configurations that we've set up that are designed specifically to cater to these bigger vehicles and these European taller vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I noticed a banner went up on the board the other day, and the 370 is now CRI gold label approved and all that. Are you guys going to work your way through the lineup getting that designation, or just because the 370 is the best seller?
I think best seller, maybe second best seller, probably going to do one or two of those. And just there's some customers that just require to have that. And so we're just working on that. We want to make sure that we can accommodate everybody.
Well, a customer that requires that's going to be a franchise, right?
Well, no, not always.
Somebody that's
we've had,
maybe working with the government or something? Or what?
No, we've had multiple requests for – I lost maybe two or three deals in the last 4 years because we weren't CRI approved, and it wasn't anything substantial. There's some other things that are probably – part of it. I know it's not me whining about it because I've asked for it multiple times, but I as I said, I'd like to kind of not know what's going on in the background, man. Just let me look forward, tell me what I got to sell, and let's go sell it. So I don't know. I just
keep your eye on the prize.
Yeah, yeah, and I know I made a sale from it for, who was it? Somebody in Atlanta, I think, and made that sale because we had the CRI approval.
Speaking of Lance and his, is it DI water, reverse osmosis, or both? That's one thing I don't. Yeah, RO. Is Sapphire gonna get into the water treatment business and offer something? Cause it seems like all the other companies, well, Hydra Force, ProChem, or maybe it's just those two that offer a carpet cleaning label.
To be honest with you, man, what are we all in? We're in the business of selling chemical. Why would we want to sell just water?
Well, yeah, or needing, yeah.
That,
yeah, it's true, though. I mean, if even with just software, yeah.
I'm not going to sell just water. It doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, I still use a rinse. I know with Lance, he's a big proponent of not needing any rinse. I'm not so sure about that. I'd have to see it with my own eyes. I know that's Dave Gill's thing, too. But, yeah, I guess to make up for that, you'd have to sell a real expensive system or one that wears out every year. that was kind of a, well, thanks for being honest. That was an awkward question.
like I told you guys, I mean, if I'm just going to be honest with everything I do. So, I mean, that's exactly what it is. Our lights are going to stay on, and guess what? We're going to be able to stay in front of the pack as long as, you know, people start buying and continue to buy the ChemSpec product. And the store.
Yeah, what's up with ChemSpec? You know, obviously they did a facelift on their bottles and labels. I think most of the products were somewhat reformulated. They probably got rid of a few, and I know they're introducing more, but you had hinted towards something being announced in Vegas there.
Yeah.
Is that
I'd like to say first off, any of the original chemicals, Formula 90, none of it's been reformulated. We just rebranded. There might be some, and a guy named Ed on Facebook the other day was asking about one of the products, and I was not aware of a reformulation, but I talked with my guru, Pat Moeller from ChemSpec, and he did say, yeah, we reformulated it to make it less foamy. And so there could have been a difference on that. But most of our stuff is we just introduced some of the best-selling Sapphire products, which was like Fission and our Dynaforce, to name a couple of them. But what we do have is, and we all know Bill Bruders, yeah, I mean, look at Dry's. Dry's is where we're at because of innovation and continually just coming up with new product, trying to keep people off balance, and then Sapphire's molded right after that. So I've got to believe, and I haven't really heard from anybody on it, but I got to believe that we're not going to allow ChemSpec to just sit down and do what it's doing, and we're going to bring it forward. Also, it's not just going to be a facelift. It's going to be there's going to be some viable. I know we got one new pre-spray that we're working on that actually will be released at the show. I don't know enough about it to be an expert on it, but I know I'm excited for this release. There's going to be some, and it's what I like about it is this, is we did a lot of outside-the-box engineering with our 370s, and I think from what I've heard with this free spray, it's the same type thing. We didn't look like a lot of this chemistry in our industry is ancient, and a lot of it's incestual, which I mean by that is everybody uses the same type formulas or the same type ingredients, and our engineer or our chemist, Werner Bookman, actually came from outside the box on this one with some stuff that has made it very, I think it's California compliant, and it has no VOCs at all. So I'm pretty excited to see what it does, but I'm gonna do some testing myself with some of my apartment guys and see how it comes out.
Well, that'll be the fun part of the Vegas show is we're gonna have all that filthy carpet there, and I've invited every chemical manufacturer to bring pretty much whatever they wanted pre-spray wise, spotter wise, to have there in our boxing ring, so you could try all this stuff in a real situation, or as real as possible, anyways. Yeah, you never really know on a pre-spray until you go out and clean for 2 months with it and see it all. But
well, if it's a tie in the boxing ring, we just throw a couple of gloves in there and we'll all take turns punching each other.
One punch. I'm dodging.
I can tell you this, man, it's going to be an overloaded boxing ring. I think I was a little bummed when they shrunk the site down. We had the whole side of the building, and then they gave half of it to Hydromaster to do some kind of a truck mount functionality display. So I think it's going to be pretty crowded in there. We're going to overwhelm the aisles there, I have a feeling, at times. But that'll benefit the companies that were smart enough to pick a booth across from us.
That's cool.
Mr. Zipper's directly across from us. So,
Eric.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be good.
Well, anybody that's going out there, just look me up, too. I'll meet you at the bar and buy a beer or two for all of us.
Just don't let Rick take you to that dill pickle bar down the road he took us to last year.
Hey, man, I go to all – I'd lived there 15 years. So are there any questions any of you guys have, though, that I can
– Well, there were a ton of questions going through the chat box there. Hopefully – most of them got addressed. Oral was doing pretty good at addressing them.
Big Jim says on there, if you really want to sell the water system. We do, Jim. That's my boy Jim up in northern Nevada, right?
No, Jim's over. He's directly across from me. He's El Dorado Hills, okay. California, right in the foothills. You know Jim, big Jim, white hair, dog lover.
He does hot rods.
Tall. I think he's taller than me.
405. We do absolutely understand the importance of water softeners and that for sure. And so, yeah, I mean, we sell them. We actually sell them. I can give you the part number if you want. But, yeah, we do recommend a water softener in every system if you have it. But what I'm saying is utilizing a treated water as your pre-spray doesn't help us near as much, that we're in the business to sell chemistry.
So we got to get to that one question Cooper. That was pre-asked on Mikey's board from Jerry Cooper. Yeah, just basically as machines are updated, will the owner of an older machine be given the chance to do the updates if feasible?
If it's feasible, and what I'd like to do is this. I'll put my phone number up for everybody, too, because I don't like to always get – I prefer that one-on-one guy call me, let's talk, let's figure out what we can do. But to answer his question is, you know, I mean, we are going to be innovative, and what I like about our engineering team is that we're just not going to sit back and think that this is perfect. We want to continually be innovative and new. We want to make sure our product is continually viable. But in that wake of that, sometimes someone feels like they had, you know, okay, so that didn't work, and why don't – is mine bad? Absolutely not. We sold a whole bunch of the other ones, especially Cooper's. Nah. So if there's an update that's available that his could be that he could do, then, yeah, I would absolutely love to make it available to him. There's just some of the things that are just not practical or even physically possible to do. And if those aren't, then I'll let him know.
The mountings change. It's kind of – similar to the bicycle industry, you know, every year they come out with a new line of bikes, and you know they'll use the same names, like whatever the Specialized Stump Jumper, but you know they'll put new brakes on it, and then you know the mountings or the screws or whatever, where they're welded on, or you know 2 centimeters over, 2 millimeters over, and you just can't change things over. But you get guys, and maybe Jerry's one of them, maybe he's not, that always want the latest and greatest, and there's guys willing to buy a new $7,000 to $10,000 bicycle every year, so they have the very latest, and they're the cool kids on the block.
Well, I'm definitely you take a guy like me. There's a good market out there for 370s like his that people would love to have, and I can sell them a brand new one.
Every year.
But Jerry, I'm going to give him my cell phone number. I would love to talk with him more. Like he had asked, too, do we put out service bulletins regarding updates and that? What we do is we do send them out to every distributor. We want to get them to our distributor, and then we let our distributor distribute to the people that purchase the machines. What we could do is and if you look at our website, you could go – can I click on that? Let me click on our website real quick.
You got to take over the screen?
Yeah, just for a minute.
Go ahead.
So if you look at our website and you go to, let's say, 370. So
Jerry's hold on, Rick. You're not. There we go. Fred's listening. You want to hit that share my screen, Rick?
Oh, hold on. Let me go back over here. Oops. What did I do? What did I do wrong?
Nothing.
Oh, there it is. Got it.
There you go.
Okay. So.
I think it's going to ask you one more time or there's a couple steps into doing that.
There we go.
So
go here. And then if you look at this here on this documentation, this here is a beautiful little thing. It gives you an actual history of little things. You can see this here tells you manual from 001 all the way to 683. This one tells you from 684 to 1312, find the serial number of yours, then look at the next manual and see if there's any kind of variances in that. If there are, then feel free to get a hold of me. I'll see if it's something that's available to, you know, and once again, like Jerry said, is it feasible to implement it, and how costly would it be? You know, simple things like that. And we're very flexible that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. Anything else on your site you want to show us?
Yeah, Pro 1200, best unit in the market.
570 on the stick.
Well, they'll take a look here at this life support. This thing is really, really cool. And you know what? Not only that, I'll tell you, it was one other thing that I wanted to do. This right here. This is a brand new app. Uh-huh. And this is our Legend Rewards program. This is something that I just love. As you know me, Mike, I live off of, I pretty much, I took this phrase from Tom Fielding. If somebody asks me where I live, I tell them, well, I have a house in Phoenix, but a lot of times I spend the rest of my time in the Hamptons, and I'm talking about Hampton Inns. I'm on the road so often. And so Hampton Inn is a Hilton property And so I just get a lot, I accumulate a whole lot of points. Well, the carrot on the stick for my wife, allowing me to go out as much as I do, is that, hey, when I'm, you know, when we're ready and when you want to, let's go to Puerto Vallarta for free, for all inclusive. And we do that. And this Legend Rewards program is very similar to that. You know, not only are you getting a whole bunch of great product, you know, and buying, anytime you buy a case of ChemSpec, you get 400 points of Legend Rewards. And now we're making it a mobile. We're making it mobile now too.
So no more coupon collecting. You can, let's say you walk into a John Don. If you walk into a John Don, do they have a way to add to your points through that app, a scan or code or something?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm just learning this myself, so that I'm not sure. What I wanted to do was give everybody this here too, if they wanted to. I'll leave that up for a second so they could, by the way, it's not Leffen Brands, it's Legend.
Leffen.
Yeah.
Legend. But that'd be pretty cool if you had the app, and let's say, no matter where you went, John Don, Interlink, John Olson or something, if you typed in your Legends, whatever, ID number, and it automatically uploaded your app to show you what points you have and what you can afford to buy at that time, take you straight to the catalog.
A quick example for anybody, just kind of reference. I use it because it's the simplest one to me. Is about 18,000 and a few points gives you a new upholstery pro, which is $529. But I just heard John Otero told me the other day, or said it, and he was saying that anything you could buy at Amazon, you could buy with your points.
Anything?
That's what he said. Now, we can ask Doral on that. Let's go back to your screen. Where do I go there?
The stop screen sharing.
There we go. Somebody did that. That was magic. Thanks, Fred.
No, I did. I did something for once.
All right. Good job. So, but yeah, I think that might be the case. So, I get real excited about that stuff, too, because, as I said, I always price shop on my hotels, but if it's within a few, you know, dollars, I'm going to stay at a Hilton if I can.
Mm. I don't know if Doral's still on here to confirm the Amazon question. So we're almost out of time, but I did want to kind of give Rick kudos and Sapphire kudos. I don't see any other company working the bulletin boards and Facebook like they are. You know, other than a few exceptions where I got to bring up a thread that got buried or unnoticed. But then usually, you know, you come up there and say anything positive or negative about Sapphire and ChemSpec, anybody else, within, sometimes it feels like within seconds, you're getting a response. And to me, it kind of seems like you guys have certain employees in charge of certain areas. Like I can tell that Pat definitely surveys Mikey's board every day, and then Mike Ellis, he's all over Facebook. And
yep.
So, who got? How did those employees get designated those certain areas? Was it draw of the hat, or just kind of what you're comfortable with?
I think it was more of the comfort level, because I mean, look at Pat. Pat is what I am on truck mounts. Pat is that on chemistry, and yeah. So. Any kind of questions that he sees, that he's going to be able to answer them. And if he can't, he'll get a chemist to answer for him. And then if he sees anything, you know, I get right on the message boards on yours. And so I'm kind of the rover. Go to any of those, you know, anywhere else.
Well, I like having Pat there. He's always right on it. I think he checks in every morning, and he fits into the more older, more mature, wiser, smarter Mikey's board crowd compared to the teeny boppers on that other forum.
Yeah, exactly.
So, real quickly, in Vegas, you're bringing the big giant truck that currently has what in an 870, 570, 370, and a Rage? Is that
and
right?
And a 460, yep.
And a 460.
Has all five of our carpet cleaning units, carpet cleaning slash tile and grout.
That's the Kodiak. With all that in there, what's that thing get? About 2 miles of a gallon?
Yeah, man. I can go 300 miles, and that's on 100 gallons, I think.
Every 300, you're filling that thing up?
Let me guess. Yeah, I think it's an 80-gallon tank.
Yeah.
60 or 80, and I'm filling up almost 300, 350 miles.
Jesus. And then you're going to have, well, last year you had that, I think it was a Dodge with something in it. Considered Tom Fielding's truck.
Yep, ProMaster with a 370 is going to be there. We're not going to have the Isuzu this year, but we're going to have, of course, the Pro 1200.
Isuzu? What do you mean the Isuzu? You had a cap?
Isuzu, we have, and that's a beautiful thing that I like, one thing I love is that we have Isuzu that has a 870 and a 370 in it. We have you saw that one, Mike, that was in Dallas.
You mean like an Aerotech type?
Yeah,
short box on it?
Box. Yep.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. Yeah. That was in Dallas. Okay.
Yep. We have that one. We have two Pro 1200 vans. We have two Pro Masters. One's got a 2500 HS, and the other one has our 370. And then we have the Kodiak. Mm-hmm. We understand the biggest key is putting it in people's hands, letting them run them, operate them, and feel them. Because once they do that, they're not gonna buy anything else.
Well, just make sure you bring plenty of hose, because you know if you want to put it in people's hands and the people are inside at the Mikey's Board boxing ring, you're gonna have to run a lot of hose, which is only gonna reinforce the strength of your machine. So it's it's an advantage, but with everybody else running hoses into there, it's it's gonna look like a giant plate of spaghetti out in that parking lot.
Hydroforce straps and
tie them together. And I know I sent out an email to all the truck mount guys, but just to make sure, Rick, strap your pressure and vacuum hose together and put some kind of a mini pearl hat tag on those hoses so that we know what truck it's connected to. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there and have to chase that hose out, going through the big mess. And when you hook it up, just make sure, I don't care if it's a duct tape and a Sharpie, but let people know what truck it is.
Yeah, we'll do it. That's not a problem.
And if Foul Zone shows up and does his 1,000-foot hose challenge, then things can get real ugly hose-wise out there.
I want to make sure Cooper's felt I answered the question well enough, and if not, if he needs my phone number or anything.
Well, he was on here from the early on, and he was logged in as Cooper. But I'm not seeing him now. Maybe he had to go. Gus wants to know if he falls
down.
Can he
get a 570? I don't know what the whole thing is, but yeah, I'll sell him a 570 even if he doesn't fall down.
Yeah. So I just want to make sure every question was answered there. Anything you wanted to ask of us there, Mr. Rick?
No, I like to comment. I love. I remember when you had asked me. You know, we had discussed about your concerns with you don't want to seem biased toward anybody, and I always said to you, Mike, never favor anybody. Be yourself, and that's probably why you're so successful. Is you just tell it like it is. I think you need to continue to do that and just always do that. Just tell it like it is.
Yeah. Well, I try. I think I do. Whether people are calling me or asking on the board, I give them my honest opinion. And sometimes I don't have an opinion because I don't talk about stuff that or give opinions on stuff I don't know about. Generally, if I haven't tried it, I'll let somebody else answer it.
Yeah. And I learned along. I told you guys. I mean, you guys are the place that I get my information, why I sell a machine a certain way and why I promote a machine to somebody in one way or another is only because I heard from my guys out there. Like, I'm speaking with Derek recently and just actually talked with him today again. And so I'm going to ask him, I told him, I would love to get his testimony because he is very passionate. But I asked him, let's wait 3 months. I said, if you're still in love with us, I said, I want a love letter, So, I want those guys, those type of guys. They're real partners and family.
I appreciate you taking care of Derek because I know Derek asked me very early on. I think right when I got back from Prescott, if I would buy that 1200, if I stood by it, and I told him everything I saw led me to believe so. I thought it was just killer. I didn't really see any flaws or anything. It just looked like it left a ton of room and it's affordable and just got it going on. and within a month or two, you know, he's got one, so I feel somewhat responsible for that sale, and I keep waiting for that commission check, but...
No, I'm just going to give you a beer and a hug. That's about it. That's all you'll get from me.
One thing I think about Rick most often was, it was actually just in Florida, and every time I take a drink of water out of a, you know, a water bottle, whether it's Arrowhead or whatever, I saw that we're out there in that parking lot, and Rick came walking up to me. He had like three or four pints of water that he, you know, he probably snaked out of the Pro Chem ice chest or something, and he sucked those bottles of water down like so fast, wham, wham, wham. Like, oh, cow, Rick, never seen anything like that. So, man, I was ready to pass out, but I need to get you one of them beer bong hats, you know, where you can just stick the jugs right in your hat. And the hose going.
Those things will be empty too quick.
Oh, my God. I've never seen anybody drink something so quick, beer or otherwise. It was impressive.
That's cool. Yeah, well, I like to drink beer and water.
We'll put that on your epitaph.
That's right.
Rick Arenas. I like to drink
beer and water. They got to put those in parentheses.
I don't know about that.
So, anybody else? Is there any other questions? And
any other questions? Rick's working late. He deflected a flight for the early tomorrow. He went way out of his way to be here. So,
what's the favorite beer I got to have waiting for him?
Actually, I when I was with Mike Ellis, we went to the Cubs game in Chicago, man, and I got this, it was 312 by Goose Island. It was a 312,
oh, yeah.
And I think it was Green Line is the one I liked. Man, it was good. It wasn't an IPA, though. I'm all right with IPA, but I like the, I don't remember what it was.
Are you?
It was clear.
I
it
hate
was really
that.
Good beer. That's been my elusive dragon I've been looking for lately.
I'll look for it.
In the world.
About 5 miles from my house is a little town of Genoa, and Genoa was the very first settlement in Nevada. It was basically where the Mormons hit the base of the Sierra Nevada and said, oh, shit, you know. They thought they were getting all the way to the coast, and then they ran into that wall. So they built a little town there, and there's a bar there that's the oldest bar in the state of Nevada. It's really cool, and if we ever have a Mikey's Fest or gathering here, we'll have to head over there. But they have their own beer there that's, what the hell is it, some kind of ale, but, oh, my God, it's so good. It's made for them by a place right up there in Sparks, Rick, so if we're up there, we'll try and track some down, but...
I'm down with that.
Very good, but it's, you'd love this bar. It's right up your alley, so it's there.
Let's go.
Pro 1200.
Yeah. This is such a killer area I'm at here. So far, people ask me, how do you like it over there, Mike? I go, man, every day it feels like vacation. The weather is so cool, and the sights are so beautiful, and there's just no crowds, there's no attitude. I got Canadian honkers flying over me every 20 seconds, and the mountain, the pastures, the cows. It's just beautiful out here. But, man, I don't know. I think I'd have to do a fest at a different time of year. I think February probably be a little too cold and unpredictable, because I know most people that want to come here are going to want to go up to Tahoe, which is just minutes away.
Well, you got to think about that, too, is like we had talked about. Why I think that festival on the East Coast should be do it later toward the, you know, I think that this show should always be done in the winter in Vegas and in the summer do one in very, you know, varied locations on the East Coast that everybody gets to see something, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a, you know, Cooper's kind of doing it a little bit backwards. He wants to move it around for the winter show, which is April.
Yeah.
And then always be in Vegas, but you're saying do it the other way around.
That's what I would do.
Move around. Yeah.
Vegas can always be in the winter because it's always nice, you know.
There's always good enough.
And in the summer, yeah. You can go everywhere. You know, go see Pemberton's in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I was just there the other day, and it was perfect weather at that time.
Yeah. I was at Pemberton's for his Winterfest back when he used to do that, and that was during the Super Bowl, so late January. That's the coldest weather I've ever been in. It's 4 degrees.
Pacho says we should do a Chicago trade show.
Yeah, in the summer.
Well, yeah. I mean, truth is, though, if you think about it, you look at John Don's CAD. I mean, they have just about everybody there anyway. It's always very
their Chicago one.
Yeah, the Chicago one is very well attended always. That's almost a trade show.
Is it that big?
Yeah, yeah. It was a lot. There's a lot of traffic there. A lot of foot traffic. People there to buy.
Yeah. Well, the next experience is in Atlanta. And other than the fact that we might finally all get to meet Martin Sutley, I don't know about the Atlanta location. We'll see. I mean, it wasn't as bad. I think it'll be better than Texas because apparently there's a great big park with all kinds of cool stuff to do, and the downtown area looks far more interesting than that. What was it?
Texas. You got to remind me, and I really shouldn't even tease you to be on this, but Pat Muller and I had a good driving from what was it, Crown in Orlando up to Atlanta story in the Kodiak, but it's not for everybody, so I'll tell you later.
For family time.
Later. Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, nobody else is asking questions. Rick, we got almost an hour and a half out of you, which I really appreciate. I think you did a great job.
Cool.
And even though I know you pretty well, I still learned more, and I appreciate it.
Cool, man.
And anybody that's considering a Sapphire,
yeah,
knows who to talk. And let's see, up next on our Wednesday night schedules, the king of all carpet cleaning, Tom King. Actually, he probably doesn't even know how to clean carpet, but he sure knows how to sell it. And what did Meg say the other day? He's got that sort of that Howard Partridge story from rags to riches overnight. And if you're looking to grow your company beyond a one-truck operation, you're definitely going to want to be here for Tom King Night next Wednesday, same bat time, same bat channel. And
thanks,
Rick, we'll see you very soon. We'll see you on the boards. We'll see you on the what's that other site you're on all the time? I can never.
I'm always on the Carpet Cleaners board on Facebook, too.
No, you don't want to go there.
So, if anybody needs me again, just go on Mikey's board on that same thread and ask for my cell phone. I'll be happy to give you anything you guys need. Thanks, Pashos, Derek, Eric, all you guys, man. I appreciate all you, and I consider all you guys friends. So thanks.
And if you're 570, if your fresh tank runs out of water on a Saturday night when you're out cleaning Denny's, make sure you call Rick to let him know so he can tell you how to hook
it. I'll do it. I'll answer. Now, a lot of times I can't account for what my answer will be if it's Saturday night at, let's call it, 9 o'clock. I might have had a couple of those 312 Green Line beers.
I'm searching for them, Rick. I'm looking for them right now online on the Zip Code Finder.
It's a great industry before the internet.
Right on. It's always good talking. I can't wait to hang out with you out there. Have a good night, guys.
You too, buddy.
Appreciate everything.
Thanks, man. I'll see if I can make it Saturday.
Go home and thank the wife for
us, brother. All right, guys. Thanks. I'll see you, Mark.
All right.